stumble by the best I can and convene the Ways and Means Subcommittee of Transportation and Economic Development. And we have today an agency overview from new Director Warner and Mike Marsh. Gentlemen, and I think you...
I have a few comments before they get started.
I think you already know the drill with the pig, and we'll give you an opportunity to buy a lifetime absolution now, but the offer will only be good for a few minutes. And prior to you starting, Ms. Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a few materials that I want to go over with you before the agency begins their overview. I have a packet that I put in front of you to put together, and in that packet you'll find a copy of the bill, Senate Bill 545. There are some overview charts that just kind of give you a historical perspective of the agency's revenues and expenditures by program area. And there is the copy of the LFO analysis for your reference. And then I've also included for your reference a copy of the bills that I've been tracking for the Department of Transportation that have a fiscal impact. I'm going to refer you first to that measure tracking summary that I prepared. I wanted to call your attention to a few bills that have a major impact on this budget that we need to be attentive to. The first one being House Bill 2139, which is the DMV fee that has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and it's also included in a policy option package, which we'll get into when we hear the DMV program budget. Then there are several bills that follow that are related to the Attorney General advisory on the use of highway funds. The next five bills have fees associated with them, and then there are several bills that are policy bills that have are fixes in relationship to the Attorney General's advisory. And then following that are just a number of, let's see, I think there's like 180 bills that have fiscal or may have fiscal impact that we'll want to keep an eye on during the session. That's just for your information. And then at the very end of your packet is a letter from Jeff Triumph on the agency's performance measures that was requested by this committee for all budgets, and so his advisory is there. The last thing is I have put at your place a calendar, which is the starting game plan for how we're going to be hearing the Department of Transportation budget. If we go faster, items that are on one day will just move up a day, or they'll slip over a day, just so you have kind of a feel for what we'll be doing from day to day. And of course, we'll have a daily agenda, so that will take place there. In the first page, I wanted to also point out that there were 17 budget notes that the agency will be addressing as they make their presentation. Tell you what they did to address each of those budget notes, how they responded to those. And there are three audits that were done during the biennium, copies of which are at your place. They are very significant ones. They're just routine audits that are done by the Secretary of State's Audit Division on General Computer Controls and the Oregon Transportation Infrastructure Fund, which is done each done annually. And then finally, there's a list of issues and challenges in this budget that I just wanted to quickly go over, and that has to do with the current funding levels, ODOT's prediction that critical transportation needs won't be met during the next 20 years. You'll probably be hearing that theme throughout their budget presentation. The aging transportation infrastructure, what it is the Transportation Commission is doing to address that. The policy issue for you is whether you agree with that priority to put the bulk or the majority of their money in bridge preservation and road preservation. And then the fee increase for driver motor vehicles, should services be provided by DMV or be supplemented by the highway fund, or should they be paid for by the people who are actually seeking that service? That's the base question for you to answer. Then the Attorney General advisory addressing regarding use of highway funds administering certain non-highway related programs, and the impact of general fund reductions in senior disabled transportation, the Willamette Valley high-speed rail program, and then their strategies for implementing information management and technology projects. They are scheduled to appear before advancing e-government in a week or so, so we will be getting recommendations from that committee on those, on that part of their budget. With that, Madam Chair, I will turn it back to you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of Ms. Jordan? There being none, we will invite you gentlemen to begin. Or lady.
Budget management to give a brief overview or whichever you wish.
Thank you. If that's your wish, let's go ahead with the budget management overview, Ms. Gilbert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. Linda Gilbert, Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management. Ms. Jordan is passing out the display from which I will be speaking. This is a very high-level overview. It will be filled with enormous numbers, but we will break them down into smaller pieces as we go through the next 3 or 4 weeks. On page 2, we see the budget history for the department, beginning with 97-99 actuals, through 99-01 legislatively approved, 0103 current service level, and 0103 governor's recommended budget. Three things to point out. Excuse me. First of all, in general fund, you will see that it looks like there's a 256% growth from 99-01 legislatively approved through governor's recommended. The reason for that is a network of bills that came out in 1999 having to do, first of all, House Bill 2082 having to do with raising gas tax and eliminating the weight mile tax. Attached to that, or dependent on it, was Senate Bill 1284, which provided for Willamette Valley Passenger Rail funding to be other funded unless 2082 did not pass, in which case it was to be general funded. And 2082, as ballot measure 82, did not pass, and so there was a fund shift for passenger rail and also an additional $5 million in general fund for public transit as part of the livability initiative. So that's why general fund appears to have leaped so significantly, but there's a light reduction in other funds that matches that. Lottery funds are for legislatively directed debt service on West Side light rail bonding. The Department of Transportation serves as a conduit for this loan repayment, and that will be finished in 2010. That's about $20 million per biennium. In other funds, it's important, I think, to note that with the exception of the 99-01 legislatively approved budget, other funds have remained flat and continue to remain flat. They do not keep pace with inflation or with other growing costs. 99-01 appears to be greater because it included limitation for House Bill 2082, but as that did not become law, those monies were never spent. This was just a limitation. Moving to page 3, we see the department's consolidated budget by fund type. Other funds is at 92%, $1.6 million, but about $600,000 of that is federal money from the Federal Highway Administration that is expended as other. Federal is other.
$1.6 billion.
$1.6 billion. Thank you, Madam Chair. Big numbers. On page.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
I just, the 1% lottery funds, I guess I'd always thought in my mind lotteries for first economic development to make standards for schools, and now we have parks and salmon. Transportation must be in there too, I guess.
Madam Chair, Representative Ringo, I am not certain which legislature determined that lottery funds would be appropriate for support of the West Side Light Rail project, but that probably was considered an economic development project. I have nods to my right. So,
okay.
Madam Chair, if you want to know the date, the chart in the back that gives you the historical perspective shows lottery funds and where they started on the light rail project, where they started to
okay, thank
where
you.
They sold the bonds and
So the lottery that we're looking at is only for the debt service of the light rail?
That's correct.
Okay.
Please continue.
Thank you. On page 4, in overview, the governor's recommended budget is a 16.7% decrease from the 1999-01 legislatively approved budget, in part because there was some limitation in there for House Bill 2082. The recommended budget emphasizes highway and bridge preservation by reallocating funds internally, and it accommodates revenues remaining fairly flat or not keeping up with inflation, generally by not taking inflation or not including inflation. And it also eliminates the highway subsidy of driver and motor vehicle services. And we'll go into that and what that means in more detail when we have driver and motor vehicle services in front of us. Right. On page 5, we show the governor's recommended budget again by major divisions within the within the Department of Transportation. Highway at 72% is certainly the largest. Transportation development includes, oddly enough, transportation development and rail and highway safety, traffic safety, things like that. Other include central services, non-limited debt service. Motor carrier is a standalone division, as is the Driver and Motor Vehicle Services. Thank you. It was close. I didn't bring quarters. Overconfident. On page 6, we see the same $1.8 billion budget divided by expenditure categories. The largest being services and supplies at 56%. Personal services is next at 31%, $549 million. Others are smaller, just to be used for reference. Page 7 begins the how we develop the governor's budget process. We include emergency board activity through April of 2000. This totaled $19.5 million and the addition of one position. Most of the $19.5 million was in salary plan adjustments, $17.6 million, and most of that was other funds. So it was another funds limitation increase.
Ms. Gilbert, perhaps you would amplify that. You said that of the $19.5 million, $17.6 was in
salary adjustments.
Is there a schedule that accompanies that? That seems to be a staggering amount of salary adjustments in a relatively short period of time.
Madam Chair, it's consistently done every other February to catch agency budgets up to salary activities that occur too late for the legislature to include them in budgets for the biennium. Bargaining is usually going on at about the time that the legislature is shutting down, so the new salary schedules are not known.
Okay.
And so the Department of Administrative Services will calculate and an adjustment for each agency based on new salary levels that have
been
bargained.
Thank you. It's a timing mechanism.
It is a timing thing.
Thank you.
Additional emergency board activities will be detailed in other program area overviews. They total $1.9 million, and that includes $600,000 of general fund. There's no more general fund than that. It was in rail, and it was one time, and it has been phased back out of the agency budget. Current service level adjustments included phase-ins of $35.7 million. Mostly this was in highway division and in contractor payment adjustments or right-of-way purchase adjustments. And again, that will get further discussion when highway is before you. And there are phase-outs of $99.8 million. $730,000 of that was in general fund. It's the $600,000 that I had already mentioned that was gotten in the emergency board. And I believe the other... the additional phase out was also in rail, and I think it was for studies, and we will be more detailed about that when we get back to rail. Other phase outs included year 2000 remediation, computer remediation activities, the community solutions team pilot expenditure limitations. Inflation totaled $30.4 million. It was reversed in revenue reduction packages because the last part of putting together current service level is what we call the 050 package, and the 050 package is where an agency reduces to expected revenue levels. And so current service level may rise above expected revenues. 050 is an opportunity to reduce back to what one actually expects to see in revenue. And that turned out to be $50 million. There are some technical adjustments that are included in the governor's recommended budget. They adjust for ballot measure 82. The reason that hadn't been done already is that ballot measure 82 occurred after our cutoff date for beginning the budget writing process. It occurred in June with the last May election. And so technical adjustments needed to be made in the governor's recommended budget to put back some positions that have been taken out and take out some positions that have been put in. On the following page, page 8, there's a summary of policy packages. There are a total of 39. They total $12.5 million, add 92 positions and 77.75 full-time equivalent positions. The first package is an 090. This is a package used in the governor's recommended procedure to reduce agency request budgets. In this case, the 090 package applied to rail and to transit, and it took approximately a 10% reduction in each of their general fund allocations, total of $1.8 million. There is a package to add an aggregate planner, actually to move an aggregate planner in the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Packages 140 through 155 are grouped together and are dependent upon one another. The net of all the packages is a reduction of about $200,000 for positions. Bridge and preservation gained $2.8 million and $1.4 million, respectively, for a total of $4.2 million. Packages 201 through 203 in driver and motor vehicle address titling and fee-related issues. Package 203 is the package that eliminates the highway subsidy of driver and motor vehicle services. They total $10.5 million and add 45 positions, 37.5 full-time equivalents. In Motor Carrier Transportation Division, there are two packages, one that continues the implementation of House Bill 3292, which has to do with drug and alcohol testing of commercial drivers. The other adds federal fund expenditure limitation of $3.2 million. In the rail division, for safety and passenger rail programs, we add $500,000, other funds, seven positions, six full-time equivalent positions, and finally another group of packages that are interdependent, 471 through 480, information system efficiencies, basically add positions, substitute positions for temporary and contracted positions. And in the first year, it is about a $155,000 reduction in the budget. But it does add 41 positions and 35.58 full-time equivalents. This brings us to page 9, our final page. And this includes technical adjustments that we have discovered since governor's recommended budget. The total is $76 million, and they will be discussed in smaller pieces within each program unit. Examples of the kinds of adjustments that are in here are carry-forward limitations of monies that have been committed but unexpended in the 9901 biennium, new information on local government funds, new information on payout schedules, and additional limitations to accommodate the local street network bond sale that occurred recently in the current biennium. And that concludes my overview.
Thank you.
Are there any questions of Ms. Gilbert?
Could you just give me another 30 seconds on the bond sale you just described? I don't know anything about it. You said it was just completed in the recent bidding.
Madam Chair, Representative Ringo. Mr. Marsh.
Madam Chair, Representative Ringo. The bond package we're talking about was $58.4 million to do the local street network program, the access management program, $30 million to the local street program, and $20 million for access management. It allowed us to do those programs, which I can go into more detail on, but it was bonding to receive the funds to allow those programs to move forward and distribute monies to local governments as well as to ourselves.
And is there any specific sort of revenue source to pay for those bonds, or is it general?
Madam Chair and Representative Ringo, the method of payment back is going to be through our highway fund dollars.
I see.
Any other questions of Ms. Gilbert?
Senator Varner, on page 7, could you just tell me, under current service level budget adjustments, includes Y2K remediation, and community solution team expenditure limitation. If you don't have on the top of your head what that breakdown is, I assume the Y2K was extra funding for when Y2K happened for paying salaries. If you don't know what that is, could you just provide us that if it isn't too difficult?
Madam Chair, Senator Pino, I will do that. I know that the community solutions part of this was $1.8 million reduction.
$1.8 million reduction.
Right, because it was a pilot. And we will get for you the Y2K remediation.
Thank you very much. I don't want you to go to a big bunch of work.
And because we're right here somewhere.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Gilbert, I have a question for you. For those of us that are new to these budgeting processes, and especially this is the first mega budget we've heard, $76 million in technical adjustments seems substantial. At a high level, could you, I know that you touched on some of the issues, give a little bit more amplification. Was this timing? Was this presentation? I mean, how does it occur that there's that much, other than the fact that we're dealing with an almost $2 billion budget?
Madam Chair, it is a large number. It takes my breath away. part of it, as we said, was the bonding program, and I think that the way I'm remembering it is that we had the limitation in 9901 because the sale occurred later in the biennium than we originally thought it was going to occur. We couldn't use the limitation then, and so it's moving forward. Is that right?
Well, and Madam Chair, the 2082 itself had a lot of positions and dollars in it that did not get spent, and so that's one thing that resulted in adjustments itself. We can go through a delineation pretty well if you'd like to see it in some detail about what all those technical adjustments were.
I think the committee would appreciate that if you wouldn't mind.
Okay.
Any last questions for Ms. Gilbert? Thank you. Then whichever one of you gentlemen, Mr. Warner, Director Warner.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. A pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. What I'd like to do is take a couple moments to just give you a brief overview. I want to make it clear that I've only been on the job now for 8 days, so I'm going to be relying significantly on my able staff to move through the budget deliberations and answer detailed questions for you. Even though I only have 8 days of experience with ODOT, I think many of you who know me know that I have about 25 years of experience in transportation issues. Most recently, I was a chief operating officer for Metro. Before that, I was ODOT's, and I'm going to use that as my one acronym if I could, Madam Chair, ODOT's Region 1 manager.
For the integrity of the system, we would allow you to buy that from here on out.
Okay.
Buy is the operative.
Buy is the operative.
I'm trying to impress the chair in his absence, and I know that this will be on the record. So, thank you, Director. That buys you now ODOT for the rest of the time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Continuing on, I just wanted to let you know that, I did work for ODOT for almost 5 years as a region work manager in the Portland area. Before that, I was the director of land use and transportation for Washington County, city engineer for the city of Hillsborough, and then I had an opportunity to spend a number of years with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So I've seen ODOT from both inside and out. So, again, I am looking forward to working with you and the department to solve our Oregon's transportation issues. I believe the challenges we face in transportation are evident all around us. Transportation is the visible hand that supports everything we do as a community and a state. It affects our education, it affects our economy, and our daily lives. But as you know, transportation is being squeezed by funding constraints on one end and growth on the other. To put it in perspective, we've had a 25% increase in population since 1985. Along with that, we've had a 45% increase in the number of cars and a 57% increase in the number of vehicle miles traveled. And of course, that's on an aging infrastructure, especially in our bridges. I wanted to point out to the committee that right now almost 25% of the state's bridges are beyond their design life, and we can only replace about 35 of the 75 bridges that need to be replaced or fixed on an annual basis.
What is the reason that the vehicle miles traveled increased so much faster than population?
Madam Chair, Representative Ringo, I think what you're seeing is right now people use the automobile in a very aggressive way to get around and do their daily lives. In many areas, don't have the options for people to use other modes of transportation. And the mobile society, where we have both the husband and wife working in different places, oftentimes the decisions are made about where to live close for one, but again, oftentimes it's further away for the other. So there's a number of social economic reasons out there that have been driving that. But in general, the economy, I think, has been one of the major driving forces for the increase of vehicle miles traveled above and beyond the normal increase in population.
I would have thought, and I think this is included in your answer, that it's just people making decisions about commuting that they're accepting now was 30 years ago. They weren't making commuting decisions that way. But why is the economy increasing vehicle miles traveled? Tied in with commuting as well?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Ringo, I think it's clear that, again, the economy is strong, therefore we have a number of jobs and places where employment are being created are all around the state and all around the region. In the Portland metropolitan area, as an example, it's very interesting because in Clackamas County, 70% of the people who get up in the mornings drive to a job that's outside of the county. Clackamas County. And in Washington County, it's essentially almost the opposite. So, again, the economics and where people are choosing to locate businesses and industries has a major decision point in terms of the number of vehicle miles traveled. You bet. Sorry, can I continue?
Senator Yee.
Thank you. But on the other hand, do people work at home more because of telecommunication that allows them to stay home and not have to travel long distance to go to work?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, clearly the use of technology is increasing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see additional increases in use of technology as roadways become more congested because of the lack of our ability to keep up with congestion. Again, I think people are now just starting to become more and more acquainted and familiar with technology. And I know that most of the places I've worked in the last few years, more and more people are telecommuting or using technology at least for a portion of their time at work. Most of them feel they need to spend a number of days at the office, but again are making the election to take 1 or 2 days and work at home, which does a lot for helping reduce those vehicle miles traveled. But if you look at the statistics, we're still increasing vehicle miles traveled dramatically throughout the state and also around the nation, if I answered your question.
More or less.
Okay.
Please continue.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just also wanted to point out that the challenges, too, are more than just policy type of challenges. And in January 2000, as an example, a massive landslide of over 40,000 cubic yards, which, to put it into perspective, is 5,000 dump trucks, closed Highway 101 and cut off the community of Yahats until mid-April. ODOT crews and contractors worked under extremely dangerous conditions to first stabilize the slide and then remove the debris. But in other areas, we added new Willamette Valley Rail passenger service, which you're going to hear about when we get into the presentations in later days. We purchased over 250 vans and buses for senior and disabled transit and conducted nearly 7 million driver motor vehicle services transactions and weighed almost 3.8 million trucks and also inspected many of those at the same time. And it's important to note that our safety efforts have paid off because Oregon fatalities are down to the lowest level ever. It's now down to 1.19 fatality for every 100 million miles driven. And you'll hear some more about that from our safety manager and his program. However, the challenge, that is, in my opinion, is also another word for opportunity. And as director, I intend to focus on several major areas to meet these challenges and create new opportunities for success. And more than anything, I'm convinced that this success will depend upon a series of partnerships. And let me go into those for just a little bit more if I could. The first partnership is continuing to strengthen our relationship with key stakeholders in the public. ODOT and transportation affect every community in the state. We respect and honor our partners at all levels, user groups such as the American Automobile Association, business interests such as the trucking community, cities and county governments who receive our funding and support, and citizens everywhere throughout the state. ODOT will have a cooperative approach to differences, not a confrontational one, as I understand some of you have had some experience that maybe not so pleasant, and I intend to work on that. We are all in this transportation system together, and we need to solve our problems together, and I pledge our agency's full commitment to upholding our responsibilities to that partnership. The second partnership area is continuing to work towards improved problem solving with local governments, local communities, and other agencies through the Community Solutions Team. This team and its five-member agencies are committed to solving problems rather than just running programs, and it represents an approach for state investment to promote quality communities. The Community Solution Team also works at the region level with ODOT's area managers to provide support for local governments on their transportation solutions, underlying solutions, that may involve other issues such as salmon recovery, land use, and development, and other things. In Florence, as an example of that, ODOT is working closely with the city to provide on-street parking and wider sidewalks on Highway 26 for the downtown Gateway block. This project calls for pedestrian and safety improvements to make the downtown more attractive to shoppers and tourists. It is a top priority for the city and the local community, and we will continue to work and support those kind of local partnership priorities across the state. The third partnership area is in managing the agency to the best possible performance, given the resources that we have available to us. We will continue to push performance to give the taxpayers the best return on their dollar, and I will need to continue the search for creative options for our future funding. At the same time, I will ask our partners for a greater understanding of the legal and financial constraints under which the agency operates. And in addition to those funding issues, we have initiatives to maximize our performance and for those who use our system. Again, Senator Yee, technology can make the system easier and more convenient to use. And we now have 58 highway cameras on the ODOT website and our tripcheck.com web service, which provides real-time road and weather conditions and travel planning, has had nearly 1.75 million visits in the last quarter of 2000 alone. So I'll give you an idea what technology can do in terms of helping folks plan or at least their commutes in a better way. And then the fourth area in which I intend to focus is on the day-to-day management of the agency itself. This is literally a working agency, and during 1999 and 2000 construction seasons, for example, ODOT contractors, I want to underline contractors, not ODOT staff, repaved 1,064 miles of state highway. We strengthened and improved 143 bridges during the last biennium, including the replacement of the Smith River Bridge, a deck replacement of the Ross Island Bridge, and the new Crooked River Bridge on U.S. Highway 97. Other parts of the agency have accomplished similar levels of performance. And now a little bit just about me and how I intend to work with the department and you. To sustain and improve this level of performance, I have established some fundamental expectations for the agency, its management, and its employees. And I've already shared that with my executive management team. Some of these include, I require, as an example, cooperation internally and with other departments, the legislature, public agencies, community organizations, interest groups, and private industry. And I pledge that we will be responsible and responsive to our customers when they ask questions about us. Next, I outlined that I expect ODOT services to be provided in the most efficient, effective, and least cost manner. Sometimes there's a conflict between least cost and effective, but we're going to attempt to do all of those if we can. I also let my managers know that I expect ODOT to be on the cutting edge in all service areas through creation and implementation of innovative public policy and professional excellence. And then one of the final ones that I wanted to make clear to my staff was I require that the directives, mandates, laws, and policies of the Oregon Transportation Commission, the governor, and the legislature be upheld. So I intend to continue and strengthen our relationship with the legislature, which under leadership of the previous director, Grace Krenikin, has done a good job of building relationship with you. I intend to build on that so that we can together provide the leadership and direction for transportation in the future. ODOT has successfully implemented all of the legislation from the past sessions, my understanding. We did the job you ask of us, from developing a cost accounting system to establishing a program budget to making safety a priority for highway projects and many more. And I believe as you go through the presentations, you'll hear how we've met those various mandates and laws that you've enacted. So, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I believe the agency is headed in the right direction. I want to continue our partnerships towards success. ODOT is highly regarded by the public. In a recent statewide poll by University of Oregon's Survey Research Laboratory, as an example, I was pleased to find out that 73% had a positive view of the agency and its performance. As ODOT's new director, I want to underscore my personal commitment to solving our transportation challenges through key partnerships at all levels, and I will continue to make the most of what we have to work with. So that would conclude my introduction to our budget, and I look forward to working with you over the next few weeks as you deliberate on our budget.
Thank you very much, Director Warner. Are there any questions? Senator Yee.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing your very positive attitude in carrying out the functions of transportation. Last election, the ODOT transportation
department.
The gas tax measure failed, and I asked my constituents what do they think about an increase in gas tax. Of course, the high cost of gas has a lot to do with it, but they all indicated that unless the efficiency of the department improve enough to give them enough confidence, they're not going to vote for gas tax. So I just want to repeat this legislature's focus on performance and results. We are very focused on hearing what's your outcome, what's your achievement with the funding we give you. So this not only helps the budgetary process, but we also need to convey to the public that you, in fact, is working effectively and efficiently, and you have your performance measures that you can convince us and convince the public.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, I agree with you that first off, I don't believe the voters in the state of Oregon have ever approved a gas tax increase. I think there's been a few on the ballots in the past, and I think if you look at the record, I don't think any of them have ever passed. But I agree with you. Our budget is the opportunity for us to demonstrate to you what our goals are, how efficient we can be in delivering the services and programs and projects for the citizens of the state of Oregon, and I welcome your review, and I want to work with you and assure you that, again, this budget does meet your expectations and does meet the expectations of the residents in your district. Again, we won't please everybody on everything, but I will assure you that, just as I told you here, we will continue to try to make this department as efficient and effective as possible with the resources we have.
Follow-up.
Follow-up.
Well,
Mr. Marsh and I had a discussion on performance measure, and I said that two or three sessions ago, we had Transportation Department's performance measures, and I think it would take a rocket scientist to understand. It was very complicated. Do you remember? So we are interested in some very clear, very brief performance measures that everybody can understand and can read it in a short time, instead of take a long explanation and a long formula to arrive at.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, I hope you'll be pleased then with what you see has been changed in the budget. And my limited discussions with staff have indicated we have attempted to simplify and make it more clear what our goals are in various areas, and hopefully you'll be able to therefore monitor those much more effectively.
Maybe some priority measures on a one-page summary would be very helpful.
Everything has to be one page.
Yes.
Senator Corno.
I just wanted to say how much I appreciate the cameras. You know, when I can sit down before I cross the mountains, and especially if we have anything to do with studded tires, which I know you don't like. But the only way I would like a set of tires being removed is, as before I said, if we put the capital in the bin, and I'm not real sure I can get that bill through the legislature. But I do appreciate the cameras, and it really is helpful to be able to zone in there and see on the worst part of the mountain what is going on, because it's really helpful.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. March.
Madam Chair, what I'd like to do is go to the agency presentation portion of your binders, if you wish to follow along. I think it's about the last tab in the budget portion, not the supplemental document. It's called the agency overview.
Madam Chair, I'm certainly glad we don't have to carry these around.
As the chair indicated, we expect to get a thank you note from the timber industry about
which one of the two?
Should be book number
book one.
The last tab.
The last tab. Thank you.
Agency presentation.
Please.
Okay. I'll go ahead and get started. The first item on the agenda of the overview is the agency mission statement. Ours is to provide a safe, efficient transportation system that supports economic opportunity and livable communities for Oregonians. We worked through this mission statement on the basis of trying to have something that would help in decision-making when employees are looking at options and balancing issues, that they think about both sides of the equation in terms of economic opportunity as well as safety and efficiency. These are things that we want to make sure are part of the decision process at ODOT. Second area is dealing with goals. They're improve safety, move people and goods efficiently, and improve Oregon's livability and economic prosperity. I'll go into more detail on those. First, the values piece. Safety is a challenging one for us because we have two elements to safety. One is obviously the safety of the traveling public. We want to think about the public and the highway safety while they're traveling. The second is our own employees. Unlike an agency that would have employees that are totally housed in offices, we have a lot of employees on the road working around the vehicles that are moving. So we have significant concerns about their safety and making sure that, as the slogan says, that drivers are giving them a break, that we're giving that safety a major push for our department. The second area is customer focus, where we want to learn from and respond to customers. We use a lot of survey processes and other involvement processes in order to get feedback from the public, both in our decision about what's a high priority project and what is a low priority project, as well as how we're doing in the process to make sure that we're communicating and hearing what the concerns from the public are. And again, whether it's about maintenance that's being conducted or whether it's about how we do our information system support. Efficiency is a major concern. We're looking at a maximum value and return on investment, which means we're trying to use innovative approaches, and we'll be talking more in this session and over the next couple of weeks about some of those innovative approaches that we're looking at, both in terms of our internal operations as well as potentially some funding alternatives for the future. And accountability, some of the members were here at the last session. There was a Transportation Accountability Act that was passed. We'll talk briefly about that in a few minutes. That, as well as five audits that were conducted in the 97-99 timeframe, which resulted in items which we implemented over the 99-01 biennium. indicate that we've put a lot into accountability. We are now even making further adjustments in that by having a plan towards quarterly status reports on projects, so members can look, as well as the public, can look at how projects are moving forward, and to make sure that we're letting them know about whether a project is on budget, on time, or whether problems have developed. That information will start being published after the end of the first quarter of next biennium, so that'll be in October of 2001. In problem solving, we've got several different areas to work with. We have stakeholders who may not be represented at the table that we need to think about. We have direct customers. We have the public who are involved and may either be directly or indirectly involved. We want to make sure we're balancing all these issues and not just administering programs as we look at these options. In the positive workplace area, we want to make sure that we're working to increase the initiative, increase the comfortability of people in the area in which they work, and have decent facilities around the state, recognizing that we don't have the funds to maintain the facilities at the point we'd like to, but we want to have them at the same level of maintenance as we do the highways upon which the traveling public is traveling. And environment. Clearly, an environment is a major priority for us, and we use as an example the fact that ODOT highway maintenance practices have been used by a model by the National Marine Fisheries Service, and if the programs around the country follow those, then no federal oversight is required. We try to use that kind of an approach of working with our federal partners as well as with our state sister agencies to ensure we're focusing on environment, and we'll talk more about that under the highway program when we get to that. Madam Chair, move to the two organization charts. Don't want to take too much time on these, but to at least ground the committee on basically what the structure of the department looks like. It's probably easier to look at the ones that are on your pages, but there's an organization chart over here also. I want to point out the first fact is that the Transportation Commission, of course, is the one that directs our policy decisions along with the governor. The Transportation Commission has five members, and our chair would have been here today, but as I think the members know, the hearing got moved up, and he's planned for Monday, and so he'll be here Monday to kick us off on Monday, and that's Steve Corey. We have our director, and then under the director directly are the communications division, which relates both to government relations issues as well as public affairs and communicating directly with the public when we have a slide out, knocking a road out, or a bridge that is having problems. We need to post the bridge and make sure that gets communicated to the traveling public, in particular the trucks that may be too large a weight to go over that. We want to make sure we're getting that information out timely and to the people in that area. That's the job of that communications division. Also, right under the director is the highway division and the highway program areas. We'll talk in a few minutes about the expectations from the last legislative session regarding the program budget. But briefly, in looking through each one of these items, I just wanted to point out some of the distinctions as we look through the highway program. The maintenance program deals with the maintenance and repair of existing highways. So when we talk about highway maintenance, that's what we're addressing. We also have maintenance as it deals with facilities. And I know Senator Yee and others have had questions in the past about maintenance of facilities. We'll discuss that also. But this program is highway maintenance. Second one is emergency relief, and that's talking about those disaster repair projects that follow on a major slide or other major activity that results from a natural disaster or other event. The highway planning program deals with both short and long range highway plans, dealing with the design and implementation issues. The next several construction program titles there are ones I want to make sure we're clear on as we get further into the budget and have those clearly defined. The first one is preservation. Preservation means you're adding useful life to the highway. That's different than the maintenance we talked about earlier. You might think about maintenance as being putting in a few new tiles on your roof, as compared to making a whole new roof is the preservation program. So if we go in and do a whole new repaving project, that would be under the preservation program because we're adding that useful life in accounting terms. The bridge program is preserving and ensuring safety on the over 2,600 bridges that we have in the system, as well as tunnels and culverts related to them. Modernization program deals with those major construction projects that are there to increase the capacity on the highway system. So it's adding a number of lanes, adding the an overpass, a major new construction project, and as we talk later on, we'll find that there's been quite a shift away from modernization as we try to take care of what we have before we build new. The highway safety program, this element within the highway budget, deals with engineering solutions to crash problems. So we're talking about issues that relate to specifically dealing with engineering the highway in order to be as safe as possible. That's different than our Transportation Safety Division, which we'll cover in a couple of minutes, which deals mainly with educational and preventive issues on the educational side. Operations are where we deal with traffic signaling systems, ramp metering, access management, information for drivers in other ways to make sure that information is in front of them for good decision-making as they're traveling on the roads. And local government is the obvious one. We're working with our partners in local governments, cities, counties, and regional governments, and doing projects with them to address issues that deal with both systems.
You just mentioned local governments, but I didn't hear you mention ports as part of that. Can you tell me the relationship that you have with ports and how we're trying to develop those relationships?
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, I guess a couple things. The first is we have a direct relationship with the cities and counties because there's a sharing of our highway fund that goes to them. And so that's the first piece. The second is in terms of direct connection working with the ports, I know that we're working with them in terms of freight movement and trying to communicate about getting freight from one location to another. Beyond that, I can get more information for you. Is there a point that the representative would like me to cover specifically?
Follow-up, Representative Smith. Thank you, Chair. Just a quick comment to committee members as well as to the department. I'm a port advocate, and I've had an opportunity to serve on many, many Oregon Department of Transportation committees. And as we go through this budget, I hope the committee will be patient with me because I want to make sure that intermodal issues, as they relate to all modes of transportation, are considered, and that ports are also recognized as a vital component of moving not only cargo but also citizens in a safe and efficient manner. So, I as we proceed forward over the coming weeks, I hope folks will indulge me on that issue. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, it's no problem on indulging. I think the issue of both rail connections as well as freight on the highway connections are important ones that we're interested in too. And we'll talk about that under both the motor carrier and rail programs.
Representative Ringo.
Where in your organization chart is the function for strategic planning and strategic policy thinking in terms of finding new ways for pricing, kind of big picture stuff?
Madam Chair, Representative Ringo, my first answer was in about three heads in this room as far as strategic planning, as well as other division heads that report to the director. We don't have a strategic planning function like some agencies might have a strategic planning shop. We bring the division heads together for issues around strategic planning. However, if you're talking about looking at funding alternatives for the future, trying to think creatively about individual packages that might relate to different ways to do pricing structure, that's mainly within our policy section, which is down in the bottom right, the Transportation Development Division, first section on the bottom there is the policy section. And they look at some of the issues of policy of different funding, financing kinds of options. Also in the Central Services Division, when we're talking specifically about bonding or financing alternatives, there are folks there that do the actual bonding and then also help us on thinking creatively about how we use federal funding options, bonding at the state level, or other financing tools.
Obviously, our focus is going to be on your budget, but I would appreciate some discussion during the presentation as to how it might relate to your long-term strategic plans. And Representative Smith comes from the northeast part of the state. I come from Beaverton, and we our transportation problems are extremely different. But I am focused on the urban/suburban transportation issues, and would like to understand more about your strategic plans in that regard. Thank you,
Senator Yee.
Thank you. Mike, you mentioned about 2,000 bridges that need to be repaired, and Mr. Warner mentioned 35 bridges to be repaired, and then 75 bridges remain to be repaired. I have a concern in my district that there's a bridge that is 75 years old, and recently it was shut down because it was too narrow and there was an accident that caused the bridge to close and caused a lot of problems. I just want to know, could I have a list of that 110 bridge that you named that are to be repaired? I just want to see how you set your priorities. If I could have a list of
Madam Chair, Senator, you
those bridges,
make, I would make sure we're clear about our numbers. 22,600 bridges is the total. Our goal would be fix 75 each year in order to keep up with the situation. The fact is that we're doing about 35. So the difference between the 35 and the 75 is our not meeting the repair process that we should be, and because of funding, we aren't maintaining that kind of maintenance schedule. At the same time, you're right, we have to do priority setting, and we maintain those ones that have the most significant degree of problem. We'll talk later on about what we call a bridge index, which discusses the condition of a bridge and gives a way for the engineers to make determinations about what are the concerns about a bridge and whether it crosses the threshold of being an emergent need that needs to be addressed within our limited funds. And we'd be happy to bring some information in about how that priority setting process works.
I follow up. I also would appreciate getting a list of, do you say 35 bridges a year? So that's 70 bridges for the biennium. But you do it for four-year plans, don't you?
Madam Chair and Senator Yee, yes, we have a four-year STIP, or State Transportation Improvement Program, and that process lists out what we plan on doing in those 4 years. Bridges are a particularly tough one, though, and this week is a good example of that, where if there's a problem with a bridge that is emergent in nature and a safety issue, we deal with that immediately, and that will come off the list, either move forward or cause adjustment and others to move back. But we can still get you the list of what's in the plan at this point.
Yes, I appreciate that.
I volunteer to throw a dollar in the kitty so we can all use the word STIP.
And the record will reflect representative generosity.
And actually, I have this here to preempt myself on STIP and DMV, if I could do that.
All right, yours is for DMV, and Representative Ringel will contribute for STIP. So we'll take notice that those are paid.
Okay.
Mike, as long as we've taken this little break for questions, you had mentioned transportation growth management. Where now is that housed?
Madam Chair, Transportation Growth Management and the contracting for that function is in Transportation Development Division in the bottom right there, the planning section in particular, but in that division is where it's housed.
And in shifting back and forth between these two org charts, I noticed that it disappears out of what used to be Transportation and Development Branch and now is Division. Is that perhaps I just don't see it? You've got policy planning and transportation data in the 2001-2003, and transportation growth management seems to have disappeared.
Madam Chair, the process of still helping to facilitate it is there, but the contracting and actual work on contracting is done through Central Services Division, where the actual review of the contract occurs.
And one last question. Mm-hmm. The right-of-way section is housed where? I presume it's in the Highway Division?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Will there be a separate presentation that touches on the responsibilities of the Right-of-Way Division? Will we get into that level of detail when we get to the Highway Division?
Madam Chair, we have a matrix organization for the Highway Division. What you see here is a program budget directed by the legislature. Within each one of these areas, or in particular in modernization, but also in preservation and in others, an element of it is right-of-way. So the budget is broken down for programs, these programs that are shown here. Within them, though, are right-of-way expenditures. So we'd be happy to show within each one of the programs how right-of-way relates to that and discuss that.
I would appreciate that, and perhaps I'll take the liberty of meeting with you privately. I've had a terrible time getting responses from right-of-way, and would welcome being able to review the specifics of the situation in my district.
Okay. We'd be happy to address that problem.
Thank you. Please continue with your presentation.
Okay. Maybe a couple points to also preempt any questions. In the upper right-hand corner is Board of Maritime Pilots. This is an agency that was placed with the Department of Transportation simply for administrative ease by the legislature and the budget process several years ago. It's not an agency that reports through ODOT, but it's shown here and will be up for discussion on the last day of hearings. Down under central services, I mentioned them briefly. It's those functions that are most efficiently and effectively handled centrally in an agency. The standard functions of finance, human resources, information systems, those types of functions. I did want to point out that it does go up from the last biennium. It's one of the few areas that does. The reason for that is that we've done a couple things. One is in looking at the support given to our regions of the highway division, we find that there are information technology specialists stationed around the state. We thought it'd be more efficient for them to not only serve the highway division, but also to serve our outstation folks that would be with motor carrier in the ports of entry or DMV stations around the state, and be able to have those folks who used to serve highway serve the department as a whole out of those sites. So we moved those employees, 10 employees, from highway into central services. The increase that you see there is not an addition of new positions, but rather a shift. And the other point within central services that we'll discuss later is a decision package that actually does add some employees. It was mentioned by both analysts briefly, and that's a package that goes from using contractors mainly to using employees. And we figure we will save at least $155,000 in this next biennium by moving from those contractors to employees. Also, we're moving along with private industry, who are also reducing the reliance on contractors and increasing the use of employees. The average in most entities at this time is about 13% contractors in the information technology area. We're moving to 16% contractors, so we still have more contractors than the average entity doing this kind of work.
Representative Rangel.
And those contractors you're referring to are information technology.
Correct. Doing programming work for the most part, but other kinds of systems analysis.
Mike, before you continue, I think one of the other things that some of us might have a curiosity about is, as you're shifting from contractors to using employees, to what degree in your information technology area the department owns the proprietary software rather than contracting for it? That has been an issue in the past, and some level, I guess, of reassurance for the committee as to how vulnerable the agency is with internal employees versus contract employees that may or may not belong to the software?
Madam Chair, it's a good question. It's one of the reasons we made the shift. In the past, we had up to almost 50% contractors at various times. And that worked in order to prepare for Y2K year 2000, which relates to a lot of work that had to be done in reprogramming. And it made some logical sense at that point. But on ongoing operations, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have that many contractors in your shop because of what the representative is alluding to. One element of it is consistency and understanding of your systems by your employees. If you pay a contractor to develop it and work all the way through it, and then they leave, and then you're trying to figure out how the thing works, people are not there to help you with that element of the system unless it was extremely well documented. So it's good to have that consistency in your employees, as well as issues around who developed it and who owns it and who has to maintain it then, in terms of your being held up by the outside contractors. So we'll get more information about that, but that's one of the reasons we're making the move.
One more thing that I might ask you on behalf of the committee, as we're asking for specifics, I think the entire committee has an interest in seeing these, and if you wouldn't mind making them available to committee staff and they can disseminate them to everyone on the committee.
Happy to do that, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Looking at the other divisions, briefly, Driver Motor Vehicle Services Division, or DMV. I think we're all pretty well aware of what DMV does, licensing and regulating the users of the system. When we get into the discussion of the budget, we'll talk about the approach we're using and bringing forward, dealing with a fee structure that pays for the costs of the work that DMV does, that we think will also eliminate the subsidy by the Highway Fund and make more sense for the system. Motor Carrier Transportation Division, motor carriers are the truckers and the trucks.
Mike, may I stop you there and ask a question? I've heard you now, as well as your colleague, the directors, make reference to that. Is this an initiative that is being advanced by the department in the name of efficiency, or is the interest in having DMV not subsidized by the highway portion of the house a result of the AG opinion?
Madam Chair, yes.
And yes, I owe a quarter.
The immediate answer is that we began looking at this issue of coverage. Everybody owes here.
I thought you had immunity.
Well, yeah, actually, I do.
The reason for moving to having that fee structure was because we wanted to make sure, for good business reasons, that we eliminated a subsidy by the highway fund of DMV programs. We felt it was a good business reason to make sure that the costs that are being developed there cover the cost of developing that administrative function, and then the highway fund can get its due instead of having money come back out of the highway fund and pay for the cost of DMV. So it was a business reason that started that. The AG discussion came in and gave us information that said some of your fees, the ones that don't relate directly to movement of traffic, motor vehicle travel, are unconstitutional unless they fully pay for themselves. So elements of that fee structure have to be changed in this session. So that we have to make sure that those that deal with donor card, with identification cards, with the other ones that don't deal with primarily facilitating motor vehicle travel, they have to be addressed. The other ones in there we think make good business sense to be addressed, and also pull from the highway fund, return to the highway fund, I should say, those funds that were previously subsidizing. So, yes, we start out with a business reason. The DMV, and the concerns about the fee structure came in from the AG, and are really back up to reasons why we ought to move ahead.
Thank you very much.
Any
other questions while we're at this little question break? And thank you, Mike. Please continue.
Okay. As I said, Motor Carrier is the trucking area where they register and inspect trucks. It's a program around the state conducted, on the one hand, through the ports of entry, and on the other hand, they move those into weigh stations around the state, which are flexible and moving without specifically assigned times in order to make sure there's good coverage out there. This program, as we'll discuss later, moved to us from the Public Utility Commission and has been with ODOT here for about 6 years. The Transportation Safety Division is the one I wanted to separate out from the safety program within the Highway Division. Transportation Safety deals with field programs that are educational in nature. They're trying to get information out so that people can make good decisions and good choices, whether it's dealing with driving while under the influence of intoxicants, or youthful drivers, or older drivers, or safety belt use. All these things are what we're trying to incent the public to make the right choice. I think their efforts have been extremely successful, along with the response from Oregonians and just the nature of Oregonians, I think, in that we have been using safety belts on a very high basis, which results in more federal funds coming to the state because of the job that's done by Oregonians to be wearing those, as well as in other areas of education where there are incentive funds where we can receive those from the federal government for doing a good job.
And it was here that the awesome funds resided that we've heard so much about in the building, and those were deemed to be unconstitutional by the Attorney General's opinion, were they not?
Correct, Madam Chair. And that's where our proposal is to take that 25-cent fee out of our budget. We discussed it with the awesome folks. The Oregon Student Safety on the Move is what the acronym stands for. And that group responded very professionally in looking at other alternatives. And our folks in the transportation safety area are trying to work with them to identify other alternatives as they move forward. But there wasn't a choice within the AG opinion about another way to fund them that we could find. Public Transit Division, that division deals with both small city and rural program, inner city passenger program, and the needs of senior and elderly people who are trying to get mobility when they don't have the ability to drive a vehicle. There's been a lot of change in this last biennium from 4 years ago. $19 million of federal and general fund has been used to pay for over 250 buses, as Bruce mentioned, and vans to over 100 entities around the state. And these service providers are making a major difference on the mobility for these folks and getting a lot more rides out there for elderly and disabled people.
Representative Ringo.
Can you just give me an off-the-cuff guess of that $19 million, how much is federal and how much is general?
Yes, my recollection was that we have $9 million of general and the rest is federal, $10 million of federal.
As long as we're taking questions here again, I've got one for you. Perhaps we can get to this when we get to the folks that are actually responsible for that program. But in general, could you speak to how carefully scrutinized those funds are as they flow down through the system? You're buying buses and vans, and they're made available then to I assume, area aging, area councils on aging, or to actually senior centers, or to transit systems. Sunset Empire comes to my mind. How rigorous is the auditing of the application of funds in those instances?
Madam Chair, I'll give you an answer, and I'd like to cover it more when the division administrator comes in. The first thing is that the money, when it goes to those entities and the buy is made, that actual asset is owned by ODOT. So the process involves us auditing them on the purchase, because it is our asset. Now, we have talked about some ways to deal with that a little bit differently, but for now, the Secretary of State's office does do an audit of these entities and give us information about concerns about the processing or about how they deal with it. So I'd say at this point, there's a significant amount of review in that process done by the Secretary of State, as well as us having our hands in the process working with them. Go ahead.
Well, my question is, that audit, at least by your description, seems to suggest that the question would be asked, is the bus there or is the bus not there? And I guess I'm trying to get to a little finer level of detail. Is there an audit trail for the check? Did the check arrive at, say, an area council on aging? And was it immediately applied to the capital acquisition of a bus? Or could it have, or a van, or could it have fallen into an operations fund? And is there timeliness associated with the purchase parameters of when the check flows out of ODOT? I'm just looking for some level of reassurance that there's a high amount of scrutiny on the receiving agencies, particularly when their 501c3s run largely by volunteers, mm-hmm. to make versus a transit district, to make sure that the funds are applied as you and the federal government anticipate that they're going to be applied.
Madam Chair, I think the answer is the funds that we sent are applied. As far as the processing and performance, what you might call performance auditing, about how efficiently they're used, we probably don't get into that as much as you're speaking. So I think maybe when Martin Loring comes in, we can talk more about how that process works on the performance side, not just the financial side.
You might share with him that I'm interested in following up on that, just to make sure that when the check goes, the check buys a bus. The check isn't covering operational shortfalls, and how timely and how rigorous the scrutiny of those funds applications are.
With that, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
The next division is the Rail Division. Rail deals both with regulating railroads, as well as crossing safety and rail planning, and looking at projects around the state. And there have been an increasing number of requests for crossings of railroads, and trying to look at those within our limited resources has been demanding, and the Rail Division will be talking about the needs there. In this last couple of years, we've had a significant expansion in terms of the Willamette Valley Rail Program, where about $10 million was added for a train between Portland and Eugene, as well as increasing the amount of motor coach travel connecting the system together. And now we have three round trips each day on that Willamette Valley Rail. Transportation Development Division, Madam Chair, we mentioned briefly before. I'll just
that's the last time you're going to say that. I'm crushed that Representative Butler's
done. The policy section, the planning section, and transportation data section, as well as research, are conducted from the Transportation Development Division. And that division works closely in the planning side with the planning functions of highway, looking at both short and long-range planning issues, and then trying to do, as Representative Mingo was alluding to earlier, those elements of looking at funding options, alternatives, different ways to price issues around the transportation system are done by the policy section. Madam Chair, that's a quick hit over the on an agency overview of the organization structure. I'm open to any questions about that before we move forward.
Are there any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, please continue.
We'll move ahead to programs and services. I'll briefly touch this. I see we're running pretty tight on time. Our goal is to produce the best budget within the existing resources we have to sustain a balanced transportation system, which means transportation system development, policy planning and advocacy, economic development, and technical assistance and grants, covering all those elements. The transportation system operations on building and maintaining the system, we've got some issues of inconsistency that we try to deal with. One of those is that we have dedicated funds for the highway. We do not have dedicated funds for issues of rail, ports, and other elements of the system. And so we're trying to work within federal funds, state funds, and other options to deal with those other parts of the system that don't have a dedicated fund source. We've reallocated from the current service level to make the building and maintaining of the system the priority. As Bruce briefly mentioned, the areas of preservation and bridge were the ones that we focused on to make sure we could keep at the strongest possible level. We took the funds from central services and actually from all the elements of the department, even within highway, to shift within the highway program to emphasize those areas. The transportation system and user protection talks about licensing, regulation, and enforcement, safety, the safety program itself, getting public information out and education about our system, as well as revenue collection and distribution. Within these issues of revenue collection and distribution, the chair already mentioned the AG review, the Attorney General review of the Highway Fund. And what that started as, I don't want to take too much of the members' time, but just to make sure we're all clear, it started because of concerns in the 1999 session. A bill passed that session that the Attorney General indicated was unconstitutional after passage. It dealt with regulation of truckers and testing positive for drug use. And would that be unconstitutional? The concern was how many other areas would be involved. We went to the Attorney General, talked about the concern, determined that we ought to make at least a brief review of the entire department. We narrowed that down to about 80 programs. Those 80 programs were significantly reviewed by the Attorney General's office to identify any concerns that existed within them and determine what options and issues were there. I think the members received a summary, at least. I'm happy to provide more detailed information if you wish. And I think the chair has the stack. It's about an inch thick from the entire opinion and research that relates to what we should do on the 38 programs where there were issues and concerns.
Is that this?
No.
Actually, it's not. I don't know if the chair has it right there.
I do. And what I think I would ask in the interest of slaughtering trees is... any members that are interested in having the complete AG report, if you would let staff know and we'll make you copies, we won't just automatically make copies unless someone would like
to. Thank you.
To help the members, the top seven pages are the AG's direction and concerns and overall theme of their opinion. The bottom 100 pages are the details for each one of the programs. And if members are interested in that, maybe one can be shipped around to look at. We're happy to provide information if you wish. But the idea of that was we started off with significant amounts of concerns like this. It narrowed down to a fewer number of concerns, and now that we've addressed those and have bills coming forward to take care of those problems, our goal out of all of this is to continue the legislatively directed program with the least possible problem. And we think we're down to a couple that we're not able to continue or find a good option for. One of those was that awesome program, the Oregon Student Safety's on the Move. And the other one was the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund, which related to $8 million, or depending on the biennium, between $6 to $9 million that's been transferred to the Department of Human Services for covering the costs of accidents to indigent people who did not have health insurance. And it went through the Oregon, our program in the Department of Human Services that deals with insuring people who are not covered. And the fact is that this distribution now cannot occur because the highway fund analysis indicates that that does not deal with primarily facilitating motor vehicle travel, so therefore the transfer cannot be made. We looked at some options that dealt with potentially having insurance premium taxes and other approaches, and none of those seem satisfactory. So the way it was left is eliminating that distribution, and the co-chairs in their draft budget have dealt with it with a general fund transfer. So that's the only thing that came out of the whole analysis of all our programs, down to 80, down to 38, and down to those last two. And our goal in the whole process is to continue the direction you've given us as best we can by doing some slight adjustments whenever possible to deal with the AG concern and not to stop legislatively adopted program. So we want to keep it moving, and that's what those bills will do. Mr. Chair, I'm open to more discussion of that at some time now or in the future, but for now, maybe I'll move ahead.
Senator Yee is recognized.
Thank you. Two questions. One is, could I have a copy of the top seven pages of the AG's direction? This will only slaughter half a tree. Another question is this a time for you to tell us what's the status of the commercial truck driver's proposal to register their drug test results on their driving record. I know that was one of the programs that was in doubt. Is this a good time to give us a report, or do you want to wait to when it fits into the program?
It might be appropriate. Thank you, Senator Yu, for the question, and maybe we could kind of line out, because this is a rather protracted budget. First of all, I want to express gratitude and thanks to Representative Johnson for pinch hitting for us while we were out of the room. I beg your pardon to be arriving this late. However, I did get a chance from where I was at in the Speaker's office, the majority office, to just peek in from time to time. You did a great job. Thank you very much for helping me out and helping out the committees.
Make $3 for the committee.
I'm the dog here.
You only got $3. The second thing I would like to just quickly do would be to kind of lay out. We're going to have as we go through this process, we're going to have a lot of opportunity to ask some questions, and I've asked other members of the House and Senate to please feel free to come and participate with us. All I request is that if they would like to come to sit at the dais with us, that we have one side for the Senate and one for the House, and additional members, will treat them with the same courtesy we do the members, and please encourage within your caucuses to encourage your members, if they have questions, they're welcome to come forward. Now, relative to specific highway issues, and that was one of the reasons why I was a few minutes later than what I thought I would be, was somebody said, I understand you're hearing ODOT's budget, and here's what I want. So relative to specific highway issues that may be requested and issues that will come up, what I'd like to request of the members of the committee is that we go ahead and hold specific requests until the end of each day mm-hmm. that we may have. And then that we submit those either verbally or in writing, as the case may be, and then ask for a response. There will be the department has assured me that they will provide a full and thorough detailed response to each specific request, as well as a cover sheet, which is basically an executive summary of that request. This way we do eliminate large quantities, and for the record we will keep the full response as well as the executive summary, and we'll each receive an executive summary, and the person who asked the question will receive the executive summary and the full response. If we'd like to know more about it, then we could ask that ourselves, ask for that. Relative to the fact that there are highway bills and other issues, I think that it's appropriate that we bring that up as a specific group of issues, and that we can go ahead and hold those the same way we do with specific questions. So I think, Senator Yee, based upon today's timing, your question is probably very timely as we're ending or approaching the end of today's session. So perhaps with regard to the numerous number of bills that are floating around in both the Senate and the House chambers, that if we have specific requests as to a specific response or a general response, that we go ahead and do that towards the end of the day, and we may not know as members of the House versus the Senate what bills are out there and what different groups may be lobbying for various kinds of things. So we will ask that if there are those kinds of things that we come across, if you'll just indicate that is a House bill or that you've already identified a Senate bill which may be directed towards the trucking industry, for instance, then what we can do is we'll just go ahead and finish that up within that process at the end of the day, and then you can make a brief summary at that time. The next day you can have, as I say, the executive summary and a detailed summary, a detailed information. And then I think with regard to any in-depth questions that we'd like to get to, at the end of each particular bullet or point area that we come to, I think it would be appropriate that the department will stop at that point and will elicit a response. If the response appears to be more in depth, and this is to respect those of you who may have a greater knowledge, working knowledge, and have had perhaps through some of your prior experience in either working through the department or from a city or a county or a port perspective or within local government, and that you would like a greater explanation than perhaps, you know, we get into an accommodator situation and a 1031 IRS 1031 exchange, rather than boggling the committee down with those kinds of things, that we just go ahead and ask for that to be responded to in summary format the next day. And then finally, relative to transportation policy issues, I think that it is appropriate for us to get into those in detail, and I treat those the same as other specific requests and bill requests and details, and that is, if we'd like to know exactly what the policy is as it relates to this particular issue coming from this particular area, why it is that we do the way that we do in that regard, again, knowing that I from a county have a different perspective than perhaps someone from a port, from someone who would have some direct experience with the department, then at that particular point what happens is that we could treat that as a policy issue and have that responded to in executive summary format the following day as well. Now, if that's acceptable, I would propose that as kind of a gentleman or gentlelady's proposal as to a kind of a ground rule that we could work towards. And I think what it would do is it would keep the format moving along the numerous number of pages that we've got. It'd keep our daily format moving in a good pace, and we would be able to respond to the issues that are coming before us at that time. But also then at the beginning of the next day, we'd each have an opportunity to hear the response. So it's important that we timely arrive on a daily basis to hear the response from the prior day, because you will have an executive summary that will tell you that, but you'll also, if you want to make sure that you understand clearly what the executive summary means, then that would be the time to answer, to ask those questions for an answer. Yes, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, we've already broken the prime directive here a multiplicity of times, and so I think the staff may have a list of how many times we've strayed outside of the guidelines,
and
which I think are great.
That's perfectly fine, and I intentionally didn't give this to you, Representative Johnson. I felt like that it would be appropriate for you just to go ahead and have the new director make the presentation and to start off. And as I say, when I looked in on the monitor screen as to how everything was going, I thought, they really don't need me down there very much. I feel kind of left out. So I appreciate the kindness and the courtesies that the committees have extended to the new director and to Mr. Marsh, Mr. Warner, and to Linda Gilbert as well. So at that point, Senator Yee, your question is in order, and then as to any of the other issues that you would like to go ahead and have detailed information about with regard to the first four pages that have been gone through here. Senator Yee?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My question has to do with a bill that was passed last session, and I'm sure you're aware of it. That has to do with the commercial truck drivers. They want to have their drug test results, if it's a positive result, to be registered on their record, so that future employers will have knowledge of their record of drug use. That was passed, but it was subject to Attorney General's opinion. So I just want to know what's the status of it. Can they go ahead and do it? Because the funding was funded by the truck drivers themselves, and I just don't understand how does it interfere with constitutional use of highway funds.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, that is the bill I was referring to earlier. It was House Bill 3292 from the 99th session. And as I said, the Attorney General determined that since we were using highway fund, and when you say that truckers paid for it, they do pay into the highway fund, and then that those monies were used or would have been used to fund this program of placing that positive drug test result on the employment driving record of the trucker. But the AG indicated that did not deal with primarily facilitating motor vehicle use. In other words, moving the truck or car down the road, they felt it was somewhat removed from that, and so they said it was unconstitutional use of highway funds. So that those monies that are paid in by the truckers through the various fees and taxes could not be used to pay for this program. However, we came to the emergency board once we had that determination and received some general fund and also did some work with looking at federal funds that could be used for this function and have a way of using those fund sources to continue the program. And what the Senator is asking about now is what's the next step, and I'd be happy to come back with an update about how things are going with that. I think a major issue in the process is working with the Employment Department on the hearings process for that. But I'd be happy to get an update, and we can bring that back as one of those items to let you know where things are right now.
So, follow up.
Yes, Senator.
So the program has started now with general fund and federal funds, and the status of the hearing is still being discussed.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, yes, I think that's a fair summary.
Mm-hmm. And you give us
we'll give you an update about that.
Senator Parnell is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would just say that your substitute chair did a marvelous job in collecting money and running the committee, and it was very nice. And as you know, this is the time I leave you to go to my other committee, and I'd just like to say it's been nice to have the new director here, and we welcome him on board, and certainly recognize that some of the things that we're going to be interested in have been prior to his time, and we'll try to be sensitive to that, but good luck in your new position.
Further questions of the committee? If there are no further questions, this is probably a good point, Mr. Marsh,
for
us to go ahead and adjourn until tomorrow.
Ah, okay.
Mr. Chair, tomorrow is an informational meeting. It is a tour of the Salem Maintenance Yard, and there's only a couple of members that I haven't heard from, Senator Smith.
Representative, I appreciate the promotion.
There you go.
If it would be all right, I would prefer to get on the road and head back to my constituents.
That's
back
fine.
In District 59.
That's fine.
If that's okay.
And we're
going back to God's country, and I can't.
I haven't been home in 3 weeks, so I'm looking forward to that.
I want to just double check members. We'll meet in the garage basement here in the Capitol basement floor.
At 1 o'clock.
At 1 o'clock on the Senate side.
Okay, and so until tomorrow, and then we'll pick this up at the even hour, 1 o'clock on Monday. You'll have some responses to some of the issues I think that have been raised here today, and we'll anticipate seeing the rest of the group on the Senate side tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Mr. Chair, before I hit the gavel, can I just ask, there's quite a bit more summary information here. What I'd like to ask is, I'm happy to present on the remainder, which is kind of agency overview information. What I thought I'd probably do is I would have Steve Corey, the chair of the commission, come in first thing on Monday. Then I'll wrap up and I'll try to be real brief on summarizing this, but if the members see something that they especially want me to focus on out of the overview, I'll be having a bit more time on that on Monday.
Okay, thank you. Does that work out for everyone? Thank you again.
Thank you.
Adjourn until now.
Can I talk to you?